This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Senate Ag and Natural Resources will come to order. Thanks, everyone, for being here today and for those listening online. Remind you to turn off your cell phones. Everyone should be wearing the appropriate badges. With that, we'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Kamak?
Here.
Duval?
Here.
Frey-Mueller? Heinert?
Here.
Otten?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
And Klum?
Here.
You have 6 members present.
We have a quorum. Look for approval of minutes from the previous meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Duvall, seconded by Heinert. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes have been approved. Pages, here. If you want to come introduce yourself, looks like one disappeared already.
We both stopped.
Yeah, you have to do it every time, though.
Hi, my name is Victoria Larson. I'm from Huron High School. I plan on studying nursing and staying in the state of South Dakota. So,
thank you for being here. Any personal privileges anyone needs? Things they want to talk about? We'll do the bills in order today. We'll start with 1035 and then move to Senate Bill 73. I guess we're already cooled off here. It felt really good.
And now it doesn't.
We're picky up here. We'll start with House Bill 1035 to allow the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources to collect receipts from timber sales on federal lands and disperse those receipts according to federal law. Any proponent testimony for House Bill 1035? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Joston. I am the State Forester with South Dakota Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to provide support for HB 1035. Congress has developed a process, passed a process to allow state forestry agencies to provide forest management assistance on federal lands, specifically U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management lands. And this process is called Good Neighbor Authority. And the purpose of it is to increase the pace and scale of forest restoration work. That restoration work includes, among other things, timber sales. And those timber sales can be done using state contracting procedures. The way Congress set this up is that the receipts from those sales are to go to the State Forestry Agency to pay for the cost of setting up those sales, and so to pay those expenses and to set up, administer the sale, and make the sale. And if there are any monies left over, that those dollars should be used to continue other restoration work within the project area or on whatever other project area is determined by agreement between the state and the federal government. So both the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management have asked DANR to enter into these good neighbor agreements. And currently we have a good neighbor agreement with the U.S. Forest Service. And under that agreement, we can we set up timber sales, but we don't actually sell the timber. Okay, we stop short of actually doing the timber sale. We don't have an agreement with the BLM yet. When we were drafting that agreement, it went to the Attorney General's office for review, and they informed us that we do not have the authority to accept receipts from federal timber sales. So, and that is one of the things that the BLM wants us to do. That was an important part of the agreement with them. So that's what HB 1035 does, is it basically amends the law and allows DANR to accept those timber sale receipts. One thing is that 100% of the costs of good neighbor activities that we do on federal lands are paid for by the federal government. The work that we're doing for the Forest Service is reimbursed. We monitor our costs and bill them for the work that we do. And the of course, if timber sales are done, then the idea there is for those receipts to pay for the costs of whatever work that we do. The federal agencies are still responsible for doing the NEPA work, so that still gets done. And I guess some of the benefits to the state are seeing more of that management work get done on the ground, fuels reduction type of work. Where I see this kind of work taking place is in areas where the federal agencies can't get, like, say, for example, if they have remote areas of land that are isolated patches that they have problems getting access to. Quite often the state can obtain access where the federal government can't. If there is work across a fence line from property where we're already helping a private landowner, if there is work that needs to be done across that fence line and the federal agency agrees with it, then there's an opportunity to combine work and use an economy of scale to get the work done more at a more reasonable price, or to get a better price on the whatever timber might be available for sale in that area. We can improve the forest health such that it's not quite so susceptible to insect and diseases, and also it provides wood fiber for the forest products industry. So with that, that concludes my testimony. Thank you for your time, and I'll be standing by for any questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1035.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Angela Ehlers. I represent South Dakota's conservation districts, and we do support Senate Bill 10, or House Bill 1035. Under the Good Neighbor Agreement, we have worked, the conservation districts, especially in the Black Hills, have worked with the South Dakota Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources to help them implement some of the programs. Specifically, if you recall, we were feet on the ground, people in the forest, when we did the pine beetle project, we were marking the trees because, as you know, your state agencies have FTE limitations, but they can contract with the local conservation districts and then we can perform the work. Where Pennington Conservation District is currently working with the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources and the Forest Service to do a marking program at the present time. So it has worked very well. We hire local people. We get the job done. And it makes a good local, state, federal partnership. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1035. Further proponent testimony. Seeing none, any opponent testimony? Okay. Mr. Woodke, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to offer some proponent testimony if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Ben Woodke. I'm the Executive Director of Black Hills Forest Resource Association. We're the trade association that represents the forest products companies, harvest professionals, and other concerned individuals in the Black Hills area. We deal a lot with forest management, implementing the projects that need to be done across all lands on the landscape. Mr. Joseph did a nice job of explaining kind of the technical aspect of the bill and why it's needed. I'm going to offer a little bit bigger picture and keep this brief. When I look back across the last few years and the successes that we had fighting the mountain pine beetle epidemic, those successes were really the result of collaboration and working across all land ownerships. It was a very concerted effort, lots of meetings, lots of work and some dollars involved, but very successful. And even though the beetle epidemic ended a few years ago, it's as important now as ever to be carrying forward what we learned during the epidemic, to care for the forest and reduce the forest conditions that are conducive to wildfires now. And I believe this bill helps promote that type of work on all ownerships. I know there's been a lot of concern about recent mill closures. The Hill City Mill closed at the height of the lumber markets last year. That was a direct result of reduced timber being offered for sale on the Black Hills here. I know there's concern about upcoming closures, and this bill may not prevent future closures, but I believe it creates some opportunities to be managing across all landscapes. If there's a way that this can help, that'd be great. It's
Are you there? Are you still there? I think your last few remarks cut out.
Oh no! Where did they end?
just say your closing remarks again.
Fair enough. It was discussing mill closures, and that this bill is not a silver bullet. It will not prevent future closures, but likely won't. If it does, that's great. But at the least, it will create additional opportunities to increase management and may lead to other opportunities that would help prevent additional closures. So, again, I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. That's exactly what we missed. So, thank you for that. Sorry for missing you in the current roundup. Any further proponent testimony? We're good online. So, any opponent testimony? Opponent testimony to House Bill 1035. Seeing none, sponsor waives rebuttal. We'll move it back to the committee for questions. Hey, Senator Heiner.
This would probably be for Mr. Jolston. Good morning, sir. You talked about a good neighbor agreement. What has been the level of conversation with tribes in South Dakota?
As I indicated, the NEPA process is the responsibility of the federal agency, so it would be the Forest Service that does that. Basically, the work that we have done so far has been after the project has already been decided, and timber sale has been designed for a particular area, and so basically we have a marking crew that goes out and marks the sale. So the decision process is completed by the time we get involved with it.
Follow up. So creating the ability for receipts from sales of timber on federal land, I guess, why do you think that those receipts should go to the state?
Mr. Chair, that's the way Congress set it up. It's really not our choice.
Okay. Follow up. Are you aware of the recent announcement of co-management of federal lands with Indian tribes?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have heard about that.
Do you see us having a place? Follow up. Do you see us having a place within that?
Mr. Chair, I certainly think so. As I indicated, it's really up to the National Forest or the Bureau of Land Management, the Federal Land Management Agency, to follow through with that. But yes, I certainly see an opportunity there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Otten.
One quick question yet. How much money are we talking about? Just out of curiosity.
Mr. Chair, it's really hard to gauge that because we've never done this before, and the federal agencies haven't really told me how much area or how much harvesting we're going to be doing. So I'm really making a guess that maybe $10,000 a year. But until we get into it, I really don't know.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Freimuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for you. I did kind of sit in on this when you were in front of the House Ag and Natural Resources, and so I'm not sure if I missed something this time. So who's actually doing the logging and the timbers? And then I think I had heard somebody say when you send them, are they marked? So somebody talked about 25% at the other one, and I had to leave. When you mark the timbers when you're transporting them? Am I making sense at all?
Mr. Chair. Okay.
Stop it.
Yeah, the way a timber sale works is the responsible agency sets up the sale, marks it for, or you know, one of the options is to market. Sometimes there are other opportunities. Sometimes it's logged by prescription, but most of the time it's marked, and then a volume is calculated from that marking. We sample the area that's going to be logged, and we determine the volume that's going to be sold, and then we will offer that for sale. Okay, and then either one of the mills might buy it, or a logger might buy it, and it's auctioned. And state law requires that when we sell timber, we have to appraise it first, and it has to be sold for at least 90% of the appraised value. And then it's from there, you know, once the timber is purchased, then the purchaser owns the trees that are actually still standing out there on the ground, and then they come out, cut them down, the ones that they purchased, and they haul those to the mill. So it's the logging industry or the mill that purchases the logs, and they're the ones that do the harvesting.
Okay.
So is that?
If I may follow up. Sorry. I know it was a kind of a scattered question, but I was trying to piece together from what I'd heard before, and somebody was concerned about the receipts and how you determine who. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Yes, there was discussion about what happens to the receipts. When the Forest Service sells timber, Congress has also decided what happens to the receipts then. In the case of Good Neighbor, the receipts all come to the state. With the Forest Service, it's spread out over a number of different areas. Some of it goes into future project work in the Forest Service. Some of it goes to the Treasury, and some of it goes back to the counties. Okay, there is a 25% of all receipts from all revenues on national forests goes back to the counties. I don't know what happens to it with the BLM. But that's what happens when the Forest Service. But the way Congress set it up for Good Neighbor is that all those receipts go to the state, and then the state uses them to pay for its costs. And then if there are any funds left over, it has to go back out into project work.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Seeing no further questions, we'll move it to committee discussion and or action. Senator Kamak.
Mr. Chair, I would move do pass.
We have a motion do pass. Second by Senator Duvall. Comments on your motion?
It just seems like a good common sense way of doing business, and it also gives us an opportunity that we might not have otherwise to help clean up some of the forests and keep them in good shape so we don't have the pine beetle or the wildfire problems like we've had in the past.
Thank you. Senator Heiner.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would urge the committee to resist this motion for a couple reasons. One is we are seeing a major shift within federal agencies to include tribes, especially dealing with traditional homelands or treaty lands. As you all know, the Black Hills of South Dakota is part of the Treaty of 1868. The tribes of South Dakota have not relinquished any of that, and I don't imagine that they are going to do that anytime soon. The Klamath Indians in Washington just sued, won a $53 million settlement from sales of timber. So I would suspect that we could be down that path if this is to go forward. You know, I'm all for the active forest management. I think there are traditional ways to also manage that with the use of fire, just like they used to. So, you know, I support those efforts, and I support logging. My problem is we have cut out a major player when we're talking about this, and that's the tribes of South Dakota. So I will not be supporting this.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion to pass? Seeing no further comments, the motion before us is due pass on House Bill 1035. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Kamak?
Aye.
Duval?
Aye.
Freimuller?
Aye.
Heinert?
No.
Otten?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
And Klum?
Aye.
You have 6 ayes and 1 no.
Motion passes 6-1. Moving on, thank you everyone for that testimony. We'll move on now to Senate Bill 73. We'll finish up that bill we started last week. We ended with, we had an amendment proposed, and now we'll move back and we'll open it back up to the sponsor for further comments and or discussion that he would like to have at this time. And what we plan on doing is after this, we'll open it back up for proponent-opponent testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chair, committee. We do have an amendment in the system, if you guys would like to move that.
Can you identify yourself first, please?
District 1, State Senator Mike Roll.
Thank you, Senator.
And the amendment should be filed, 73G.
We have a motion by Senator Duval, 73G. We have a second by Senator Otten. Would you like to comment on that before we move on?
Sure. So essentially with the amendment, what we ended up doing is keeping a similar format last time, and we actually restructured the entire section so it actually makes sense. There's a couple spots where it said you can't do it, then you can do it, then you can't do it. So what LRC did a really nice job actually of doing is laying it out into different sections based off what type of land it is. And what it'll do is it'll allow night vision and artificial light on private land like it currently does. And it took out the two max people on private land. And then on public land, it allows night vision on public lands, on lands that you can currently hunt. But if it is a privately owned piece of land that is leased to the GFP, the person hunting would have to reach out to the landowner in the same capacity they do now currently with trapping, to be able to get permission to do it on that land. And then to further settle some heartburn on it, that we don't really want conflicts happening out in the field on public land, you are only allowed to be doing it from January 1st through August 31st, so we won't have any issues with big game hunters and coyote hunters at the same time.
Thank you for that overview. To put the bill in the form the sponsor wishes, I think we'll vote on this now. So all those in favor of the amendment 73 G, I believe it was, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion passes. The bill is so amended. So do you have any more comments you wish to ask, or should we open it back up to proponent-opponent testimony? Okay. Well, now we'll move to further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 73.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be in front of you for the first time. My name is Nephi Cole. It's N-E-P-H-I-C-O-L-E. I'm the Director of Government Relations and State Affairs for the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which is the Firearms Trade Association of America. So we represent anybody that makes, moves, or sells a firearm, ammunition, component, optics. Our members are Black Hills Ammunition, Cabela's, Beretta, Remington, Federal Vortex, Weatherby, Glock, Sig Sauer, and over 9,000 other companies. We're about 15% of South Dakota's outdoor recreation economy is represented by my companies and the people who work for them. We're about a $330 million a year industry in the state of South Dakota. That's shooting sports and hunting-related outdoor recreation. We're also the number one source in the United States of America of dedicated funding for wildlife and habitat conservation in the United States of America. And that's because our members pay an 11% tax on firearms and ammunition called the Pittman-Robertson tax. So that Pittman-Robertson tax amounts to about $1 billion every year in conservation funding that goes to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and then is redispersed to the states. And in South Dakota, we help maintain vibrant wildlife populations with a $12 million worth of funding, roughly, each year that comes to the state game Fish and Parks Department here to do a number of things, including manage predators, you know, and create habitat opportunities, develop hunters' education and shooting ranges. So with that, just want to express our support of this bill. It's appropriate to control predators and to do that so that you can have vibrant wildlife populations. In 47 states, I believe, you can hunt predators at night. Where the way that we view thermal and night vision is this, is we've heard some people say, well, it's dangerous for people to hunt at night. It's legal for people to hunt at night. What we're talking about is the legality now of tools that make it more effective for people to go out and be able to positively identify those predators that they are targeting and to remove those from the landscape to aid in better wildlife populations of what we would term those sporting wildlife that we want to protect appropriately. So with that, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for considering this bill, and look forward to seeing you in the future.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 73 as amended. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 73. Seeing none, we'll move to opponent testimony on Senate Bill 73. Any opponent testimony in the room? Morning.
Mr. Chair and members of... Am I on? Mr. Chair and members of this committee. Give me a second, if you would, please. I'm getting old. My name is Noel Shequin. I'm a retired family practice physician residing in Hughes County, a sixth-generation South Dakota resident, a lifelong hunter. I'm speaking on my own behalf in opposition to Senate Bill 73 as amended. I wear orange so you can see me. I fear that if this bill passes, sportsmen like myself may not be seen, and we and our families will suffer from unfortunate accidents. Private landowners are able to dictate the number and locations of other hunters on their property. As amended, however, this bill allows the use of night vision equipment and high-powered rifles, which has not previously been allowed on public land, with over a mile of lethal range on public land and walk-in areas. The amendment may eliminate the walk-in areas. It does not eliminate the areas that are public, such as Custer State Park, some of the areas around here, Little Bend, etc. It's difficult to see other hunters or campers at extended distances with night vision or thermal vision equipment. They often allow hunters to see a predator at up to 400 or 600 yards, and more expensive, newer units can see even further. But they're unlikely to see another hunter at 800-plus yards away engaging in their own nocturnal hunt or camping on public land unless a diligent search is made and the person knows that they're there. Many times the hunter may not know there's another hunter on the property, especially these large public areas. Most hunters choose to or are required to wear safety orange during firearm seasons to prevent being shot. Even so, I have been subject to close misses from distant hunters and have held off on discharging my firearm when I saw an orange-clad hunter in the distance that I had not previously seen. Downrange nocturnal hunters don't have the ability to visually identify themselves before the shot is fired. They may be not seen or misidentified as a predator. I'm concerned that passage of this bill will allow for more accidental shootings, and thus I hope to see you vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 73 that are in the room? Any further opponent testimony? Seeing none, we'll move to the opponent testimony online.
This is Nancy Hildam. Is it right for me to talk now?
You may go. Proceed.
Okay, I'm Nancy Hilding. I'm president of Perry Hills Audubon Society and the registered lobbyist, therefore. I would like to call your attention, if you haven't seen it already, to a letter I sent to you on January 27th. It was a long letter with three attachments, and in it, it goes into explaining the misunderstandings about whether hunting is allowed for animals in ambient light under current law. It's actually allowed for fur bearers under administrative rule, not law, and also for coyotes because their season is established by law, not administrative rule. But I'm going to go into that later. At first, I'm going to request to say that we oppose this bill and just want it killed in its entirety. We think this creates a risk for people, domestic animals, and non-target wildlife, especially wildlife that are at risk, such as threatened and endangered species. However, the version that Senator Roll just did makes it better. It's better than his original version. But we would suggest, if you go forward with this format, which I hope you don't, we would suggest a few amendments. We would suggest that you define your list of species with the qualification of during the hunting season. The beaver is qualified with during the hunting season. This is because of all the fur bearers. It's the one that doesn't have a 365-day season. But you should qualify all of them with during the hunting season. So if the game fish and park, so you're not establishing a right to night hunting for all of these species, and that would allow the Game Fish and Parks Commission to change rules about fur bearer hunting. So we're requesting all of the species be qualified by during the hunting season. We sent a letter to you. We attached the press release from the website statement that the subspecies of skunk and fox, which are called the prairie gray fox and the plain spotted skunk, were approved for a 90-day finding by the Fish and Wildlife Service and are moving forward into a 12-month finding, which is where they decide if they should be listed. And I attached you the website about this from the Fish and Wildlife Service and the schedule for listing for species for the when they're going to come up with a 12-month finding. So we are requesting that if you go forward with this language, we object to it, but if you go forward, you qualify and strike the – and also the swift fox is a state-listed threatened species. We qualify that you make it red fox and striped skunk. So you don't let people think they can be shooting spotted skunks, swift fox, and prairie gray fox. Okay, we want those amendments. Okay, so then we want beaver stricken from this list. And we wrote to you about this in our. It's not a predator. It's a species that provides great value to South Dakota. You have some bill asking for $10 million to do a study to help save water in West, to
Ms.
bring
Helding,
up water for the Missouri.
You need to stick to the bill about at hand.
Okay. All right. So beaver help retain water. They create riparian habitat. They change drainages that have deep channels and into a flatter drainage with lots of ponds and water, and they save water, which we need in South Dakota, and they should not be on this list. Okay? So they're not a predator. So now I'm going to get back to my original point, which is the logical justification for this presented by Senator Rowe was that current law of South Dakota allows night hunting, which means it allows, for everything, it sounded like what he thought. That's dangerous because, ambient light hunting is dangerous. So we're helping to create safety by having night vision glasses. That's their argument. You know, I didn't believe that, so I looked it up. So what you have is coyote hunting is set out by state law without restrictions on time of day. Most of the species in South Dakota are in a set of regulations, and I have the citations in my letter. And they're all have time of day restrictions on them. So this is an administrative rule. This is not in law. Okay, there's one set of species, which is called the fur bearers, which are the species that people trap, where there are not time of day restrictions put into administrative law. And so I assume this is because they want the trappers to be able to go out at night with flashlights or whatever, find the animals in the traps, and service their traps at night. And you took care of this in your original version of this law when you said that, the restriction on night vision and glasses didn't apply to trappers. Okay, so So when you look at the species that for which there is no restriction on time of day in their hunting season, it's not just the species that they have listed here. There are other species that are not on his list that are fur bearers that by default, I think inadvertently, by accident, a loophole exists to allow night hunting without restriction because they were trying to allow night hunting for trappers, and they didn't qualify in there that a time of day restriction for boot hunters walking around on the land because it was targeted to trappers. So our counter suggestion to this whole law that you are looking at is you provide an alternative amendment which says that the Game Fish and Parks Commission, at its discretion, has the authority to allow night vision to be used when boot hunting, walking around on the land of the fur bearers. And you will the problem with the hunting with ambient light is an inadvertent artifact of the Game Fish and Parks Commission trying to allow trappers to service their traps. It is a problem created by how the commission wrote the rules on fur bear, and it should be solved by the commission. And the commission should go in there and look at its rules for all of these species and decide for each species whether they want to allow night vision or spotlight hunting for each species. And that will take care of the problem of ambient light night hunting, which I think is an inadvertent artifact, a loophole created by them trying to allow trappers to trap fur bears. So when they're telling you you need night vision because South Dakota law allows hunting with ambient light for all these species, that's not true. It's only for a few species that are fur bears. And the loophole is inadvertent, was created by the Game Fish and Parks Commission, and you should give them the authority to fix it by allowing them to allow night vision hunting for the fur bear species and coyotes if they should so feel like it. Now, the coyotes, it's not listed in the fur bear, it's listed in the law, but when you're on Custer State Park hunting coyotes, there's a time of day restriction for coyotes. And we're afraid that this law, if you pass it the way you're trying to pass it, will create a right to night hunting for all these species. And if the commission wants to say the gray fox has a 365-day hunting season right now, and if it wants to decide to have...
We are aware of what the commission is able to do. If you could wrap up your testimony, I would appreciate it, please.
All right,
thank you.
Well, I'll just stop. I'm suggesting that you give the commission the authority to revise its fur bearer trapping regulations to include night vision hunting if it so chooses. And you guys don't try to solve this for all of these species. You turn it over to the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponent testimony? Seeing no further opponent testimony, I'll off the sponsor a brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. District 1 State Senator Mike Roll. I guess I tried to take notes, go through a couple of the things. It's not new language. As far as what you can hunt, what gun you can use, that's all the same. There is restrictions. It has to be smaller than a 225. It's the exact same locations you can currently hunt. It's just allowing different processes to be able to use night vision. You have to get landowner permission if they lease it to the Game Fish and Parks. The note on the Custer State Park, I invite you all to go to their website. It's on the front page. It says unlimited hours for coyote hunting or coyote hunting. It's not in the rules. It is in law. I'd refer you to 41.817, which is what we're amending. If you look up the original version, it has all this pre-listed in there. The actual process, or the actual debate we're having is not night hunting, not night hunting, these animals, those animals. The debate we're having is if you're allowed to hunt there currently, are you allowed to be able to see better? And that's really what the question is. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Duval.
thank you for Senator Roll or Mr. Cole, either one. So I heard a concern that this might invite more hunting on public land at night, and even with night vision goggles, you're not going to be able to see that hunter orange. What's your reaction?
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Duvall, I think that if anyone has used night vision or thermal, what they're going to recognize it is much easier to see the safety factors increased exponentially by being able to utilize these optical tools that are available today. And it's technology that really the question maybe should be why we don't require it, much like you do require hunter orange, rather than, you know, disallowing it. I'm not suggesting that you would do that at this point, but I'm saying that for those who have used the tool, the suggestion, my personal experience using these tools is that they certainly make it much easier to identify. If you had somebody out there in the field with you, they greatly increase your capability to use a firearm safely. As we know, the first rules of firearm safety are number one, you know, you need to be sure your target, be sure your backstop, and that's really what these tools allow you to do. And I think it's entirely appropriate also that these tools, and I don't think this bill changes, we're not really talking about changes in species, we're not talking about anything like that. I mean, it is just a change in the optical tool that you're allowed to use for clarity. I think it makes a ton of sense to move to the best technology for these types of predator hunting, which is, you know, a nuisance control operation.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Seeing no further questions, move it back to committee discussion and or action. Senator Kermack.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank the sponsor of the bill. The amendments that you brought forward are very good. They're going to take care of a lot of the concerns I had. So with that, I believe I'm going to support the bill.
Thank you. Further comments and or motions? Senator Otten moves to pass. Do we have a second? Second by Senator Freimuller. Comments on your motion?
I think it's a great idea to allow this equipment, and I do believe it is a more safe form of hunting with the night vision if you're going to be out there doing it than just in the ambient light. So makes a lot of sense, and I don't currently practice it today, but at some point in time I do plan on getting some equipment and enjoying this.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion to pass? Senator Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For something that I thought was going to be so simple, it's kind of turned into torture. The more this has been discussed, I remember as a young kid the joy of going out with a shotgun and shooting rabbits at night. It was fun, but I was using a shotgun. And that's where the torture comes in for me. I understand the upgrade in technology and the ability to see but I don't know the technology well enough to know what I could see. And it's a big difference between using a shotgun versus a rifle, even though it's a smaller caliber. I understand that. And I'm kind of surprised that we have no representatives from the Game Fish and Parks here to weigh in one way or another. And, I keep going back to when I was 17 years old, you know, and it was harmless, other than maybe an accidental shooting in your foot. But it was harmless. But when we move it from shotgun to rifle, and especially because I don't know what you can see. And so I'm going to be voting against this to the dismay of my seatmate. But I told him I struggled with it. And I need to know more before I can vote yes. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion due pass? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 73. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Kamak?
Aye.
Duval?
Aye.
Fried Mueller?
Aye.
Heiner is excused. Otten?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
And Klum?
Aye.
You have 6 ayes and 1 no.
Five. Motion five, passes 5-1. That concludes our business for today. Any other anything else that needs to come before the commission or the committee? Seeing none, a motion to adjourn.
Move.
So moved by Smith, second by Duval. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.